Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. We are hanging out with my cross-country friend, Mr. Aaron, up in the Seattle area. How's it going, Aaron?
Going well, going well. Sun's out.
That is good.
Summertime.
That is good. Aaron, I believe last time we set a record for most laughs or chuckles during a podcast episode. I'm kicking this episode off, though, with some bad news.
Oh.
So, if you remember, when I was up there, I got this thing.
Yes. Yes.
So, typically, this is what I take to the beach.
Yes.
I've not been able to take this to the beach. I've been trying three different times now. And, yeah, here we are.
haven't been able to get out. Well, what's, I mean, this is sort of your summertime thing,
yeah,
right? And I'm assuming it's pandemic related. You've made some other attempts and they've been foiled.
Yep. We've tried just about every single month. We're going to try, we're crossing all fingers that maybe October, maybe that'll be our month. It won't be a super hot beach vacation, but it'll at least involve water, hopefully. And
you go to Virginia, is that right?
Well, this time, if we do October, we went that way last year. That's actually a very good memory. If we make October happen, we're going to go down to the Gulf Shores. Get on the highway and drive straight south until we hit water, and then park there for a little while, maybe a week or so. But I'm trying not to get excited, but we've been using these things around the house, like just and whatever's like, man, that's. I got that with Aaron, and then we went right over to the beach not long after because that was a build, and then here we are. Oh, and for everybody who's listening on the audio side, which is most people that have been completely rude, Aaron very graciously gave me a Yeti Smart Deploy, like thermos, I guess would be appropriate name.
Yeah.
Something like Tumblr, that.
Yeah, I mean, they're great. I was just going to say, I don't think people know what you're holding up there, but yes. Yes, and so that was on the back end of a wager we made at...
Yep.
Was it build a year ago?
Yes.
Year prior to the last build.
Yeah.
And so we made good on that, which was great. And now here you are. But yeah, a shame. I mean, that's how it's been, right? I mean,
yeah.
what do we do? You know, and now we're approaching this back to school time. And it seems like as well, like this time of year, everyone kind of also doubles back down on work. I don't know if you've had that perception too. Like people kind of come off the gas a little bit, and now September it gets really serious until you make that run to the new year. So I don't know.
Yeah,
kind of interesting.
I think you're spot on. I mean, we see that just from like a business perspective that July and August things are, I don't want to say coasting. I think that's the inappropriate word, but it's definitely less intense. And then like just the meetings and things we're preparing for. There's also Microsoft Ignite coming up. And I think that's sort of a big catalyst of like, okay, we got to get products, interviews, people, posts all lined up for Ignite, which Microsoft has announced, by the way. I forgot to put that in the show notes. They're splitting it up. I'm curious on your thoughts on this. I called it because they just launched the Surface Duo, which is a Duo folding screen device. I'm calling this Ignite Duo because they're going to do, I believe it's September 22nd and the 24th. There's going to be 48 hours of it. And then there's another event, but it's still Ignite, happening sometime in 2021. So,
yeah, I heard about this sort of dual mode program they have going. I was going to bring up that there's actually going to be kind of two Ignites, and they're going to be different. It's not just going to be, one's here, one's there kind of thing like they used to do.
Yeah.
And I think they have doesn't VMworld still do that? They've got VMworld Europe. They've got VMworld this and that.
Yep.
But a lot of times they use the same content, right? I mean, they just, deliver it, over wherever and get it to the rest of the world.
Yep.
This is different because they're both going to be virtual, right? And so it's going to be all different content. It's going to be an enormous amount of content.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the strategy is they just don't have the time that you would in whatever a four-day, all-day-long kind of thing for people to come and spend that much time together. The feedback I've heard from my inside sources is the... I don't know about politics, but just the wrangling, the effort involved to get a slot to present is very, very challenging.
Interesting.
And so the question then is, okay, what are you saying? How are you going to say it? And if not this one, then the next one maybe. And if not that one, what are you going to do? Especially if you're launching something or you have an announcement of some kind. So there's a lot of I guess, sorting out going on relative to this right now.
It's interesting that you bring that up because I didn't quite hear exactly that, but I heard similar things about Build and Inspire that honestly, for Microsoft putting on a virtual conference like that, it is just, it's a lot of work to begin with to put on a physical show, but when you're doing the online only version, it's for Microsoft apparently, it really increases the stress because it's very time sensitive. Everybody has to be there, and there's only a few people who can actually do that, like the technical side of it. And so, one of the rumors floating around, and I can't verify this, is that doing a full week of Ignite was just gonna, like, frankly, like destroy some people. And trying to
Yeah.
have all that lined up was a lot.
I could certainly see that, right? I mean, the traditional in-person events are, and very, as everyone knows who goes to these, a non-trivial undertaking. They're extremely elaborate. There are many moving parts. Although you don't have the physical venue and the catering and the snacks and drinks and the security and all that stuff and the registration people and the backpacks and all that. There are a whole other set of different logistical challenges associated with doing the virtual game. And I'm empathetic, but I also really feel for our friends in different organizations who are really having a challenge to get their content plan squared away and figure out if they are going to present, and based on the kind of constraints of that, what they're going to present at all, right?
I've overused this term, interesting times, but it really is because everybody is, I think in May around there, sometime we're all back on our heels. We're trying to figure out, okay, let's like, what is gonna happen? Like, is the world ending? Like, is the comet coming and we should just go put on our sunglasses and just wait for the arrival? Or are we gonna power through this and sort of turn the corner, at least from that work from home perspective? And to me, it feels like the latter. Like, people are starting to say, okay, this is what we're gonna be doing. How do we fit into that journey? And I think that answer is starting to come together, but it's interesting times.
I think to kind of, run with that for just another second is, and drive it into this kind of frame of IT is, we didn't know maybe how long. I remember us kind of doing an over under on whether Build would happen in person or be virtual. Right now, it's laughable. Of course, it's virtual. Everything's virtual. So now we're sort of in this new normal of, okay, this is kind of the long term. This is how it's going to be. The market has kind of snapped to that, right? I mean, today Apple, reached a $2 trillion
Yeah, crazy.
value. Like, amazing. The opposite of what I thought would happen during this time. But it stands to reason that everyone's working from home. You have more demand on your gear, and you want to have more gear. And I certainly have procured a handful more bits and pieces around my home office setup, in addition to bringing a ton of stuff home, and as we have many of our people. And so, thinking about this, and this also, maybe is a really nice segue into one of the key points that we're going to talk about, is driving some of the major shifts that are happening in technology. Some of the not so subtle shifts is reorg that was just announced at Microsoft, and what of that, and what of all these things that are happening? The incredible success of Zoom, and then as a result, the really rapid implementation of some of these new features into Teams. Like, I've never seen Microsoft move so fast on some of the stuff, and so on and so forth. So I think, yes, this is where we are. And so, thinking about it in that context and thinking about where it goes from here, I really think that we're going to emerge from this very slowly, and then the return to normal is going to carry with it many aspects of what we have now, which I think is good. I think it's good for IT. I think it's good for technology. I think it's good for all of us, all of our listeners. But I think it is definitely indicative of this kind of semi-permanent change in the landscape that we're in.
Yeah, to follow up on what Aaron alluded there to, a little birdie kindly, gave me some gifts of knowledge about what is happening inside the world of Microsoft. And the big change here at a higher level is that Windows is being led by Panos Panay now, and he's of surface fame, is getting more people underneath. And this, it was sort of baffling. And the big one that stands out to me is Project Reunion, which we have talked about here before, which is the future app development for effectively Windows. It used to be under Azure, which didn't quite make sense. And now that is all shifting and moving under Panay's leadership. And so the intent, per my understanding, is the natural evolution of, hey, everything's just going to be working closer together. The people building Windows are working next to the people who are building apps that can run on Windows, who are sitting next to the people who are building the hardware that is going to ship with Windows. And so that's sort of the big shift at a high level.
Yeah, and it seems like it could be indicative of several things. Mm-hmm. When Windows went to Azure, my read was that they were trying to keep kind of all of this core OS stuff together, yeah, and seeing the cloud as being, you know, number one and the fastest growing thing. I wondered if, you know, there was some other stuff brewing relative to the way that they were going to manage, mm-hmm, that kind of the kernel level code base for all the operating system stuff. The latest change, moving this all under Panay, I think is good. Mm-hmm. I think it's actually very good because it does signal seemingly that Microsoft is prioritizing Windows in a way that it wasn't before. Is that because of the pandemic and kind of the pandemic's repopularization of the client and of Windows? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe this was coming. I think Panay is the right person to own it. I, mm-hmm, think that he's got strong vision and the leadership and all those things. But I also think it's important for everybody to know that there are many, many very intelligent and very valuable people inside that organization that have that where nothing has ever changed, right? I mean, their priorities and the work that they're, mm-hmm, doing and their kind of the fabric of their teams, you know, the change is probably incremental for them. But all of that said, you know, it does, and some of the chatter in the forums and things is really about, oh, this flip-flopping and they don't know what they're doing and they lost so much time and Terry Myerson this and that and all this. And yeah, there certainly is truth to that. There has been back and forth, but you know, if we disregard outwardly what may seem like either a poor plan or a poorly executed plan or some confusion, and just sort of think about it in the context of the way that the world works now, which I think for many of us is an environment of sort of frequent reorgs on a scale that never lets the concrete set up, so to speak, mm-hmm, right? It keeps everything's kind of fluid and the organization's always in flux. And that might be what they were after in the first place. So I don't know that I would be as worried about or caught up in the sort of back and forth. It's really about where this positions the operating system to go from here. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes complete sense. It really does.
You think about Azure, you think about like the other interesting thing that came out recently is this whole, and I have to refer back to my notes, the outage experience. You see this Azure experience management discussion that was going on. There was an outage and so the Mark Russinovich, the dialogue was about creating a better outage experience or something like that. There was a cute narrative around that. But, you know, yes, well, why are there outages? And yes, it's just one service went down. But when that service is your authentication service, mm-hmm, and we have to have 2FA, then everything's dead. Like the whole service, like our whole, you know, whatever it might be, Office 365 appears to be down, but it's just because this one little service, you know, and then the discussion is flipped back on the app dev to say, oh, you should have architected your app better. So it wasn't dependent on that single source part of failure or whatever. So it's a little bit of an interesting thing, but this all goes back to Windows in this sense that they're inextricably tied increasingly to the platforms around which your applications are built. And so this
Okay.
marriage to Azure, in a way, was a nod to that. The move back ties it maybe more closely to hardware and devices and things like that. So, it's just, I don't know, kind of a head scratcher moment to say, well, what does this do for us? And I think it really puts more attention on the core operating system, the things that matter to most of us who are in IT, I think is my takeaway today.
Yeah, which
So far.
segues very nicely into some things we heard not long after we talked last, is that Windows 10X, which, and this might have been one of Panay's first sort of maybe big decisions once he sort of took over, because he took over Windows before he took over the whole thing, is that Windows 10X sort of has come full circle from what I originally, I think, wrote about it maybe like 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Is that they are actually pulling out, which breaks my heart, the Win32 app containerization technology, what was known as Project Veil, and it's effectively going to be more just like a Chromebook style, but running on Windows, and it's all been delayed until 2021 at the earliest.
Didn't we predict this?
Yeah,
I mean,
I
I
think we
could
did.
swear if you and listeners go back to whenever it was, like a year ago, year and change ago, we were talking about this, and we were like, hey, third cut at it, maybe third time's a charm,
Yeah.
but here it is again, right? And going back to some of these, I haven't spent too much time in the forums, maybe, but the dialogue really is about the same kind of history repeating. Just call it something completely different. There's all kinds of crazy dialogue going on, but that, I kind of felt like there would not be an easy way to pull this off. I think you may have been what you wrote about it, Brad, that this really becomes more of this low-end kind of
Yeah.
thing for education and some of these other kind of scenarios, just to have a low cost kind of starter part, entry point for Windows use that has maybe a familiar user experience. Again, goes back to the beauty of this being back under Panay, but doesn't have, all the complexity and kind of all the juice
Yeah.
under the hood. I don't know. I don't know. I still think it's going to get even more watered down, is my hunch, and we'll see it in a few devices, and it might magically go away again,
Here's
and to be reborn as something else. I don't know.
one phrase that I heard to describe the new direction, and I think this might kind of lay out some framework or just at least thought process about it, is that imagine a device that is designed to run Microsoft 365 through a browser. Where does that, and the thought was, is like, where does that take you in the Windows world? And so keep that in the back of your head as everybody else hears about 10X and what the direction Microsoft is heading. Because you can even look at the way they position the Surface Duo, which was announced last week. Yeah, they positioned it as a productivity sort of molding foldable display thing. You can imagine them doing that same thing with sort of like an ultra lightweight version of quote unquote Windows or whatever they're going to call it.
For sure. And what's preventing them from writing kind of Windows 10X apps specifically for M365, right? Just a slice of, maybe not full, Win 10 Enterprise quality, Word, Excel, PowerPoint. But what about having, sort of a lightweight Teams app and to your point, maybe a slightly richer than the web-based versions of Word, PowerPoint, and Excel that kind of run native and all of that. That is a very good argument. I think that's fair, and that there would be value in that, no doubt, especially from a super lightweight kind of throw, like almost a disposable device, almost like your tablet kind of experience. Yeah, that's a possibility. Furthermore, have you heard about this Your Phone app?
Yeah, so candidly, I know of it and I've seen it used, but at the end of the day, I'm an iOS user. So it's completely
Yes.
useless to me.
So I'm an Android person, and I also read that this is going to become available for, the other Windows experiences. So you can run your whatever Surface Neo apps on 10X or whatever. But really, it's just like a streaming service is what it looks like, right? I mean, your app still actually runs on your mobile device. It just is presented on your PC. But I wonder if that's, kind of part and parcel to kind of what all of is coming and happening here. But I don't know. I am an Android person, and so for me it was exciting,
Sure.
although it's right now only Samsung,
Yeah.
and specifically only Samsung Galaxy. So it kind of is limited, but maybe a nod to this direction, right, of where things are going. This kind of fluid, everything's available on any device you use it on. You can get to all your data everywhere you go. Isn't that what we're after all, anyway?
Yeah, it really is. It honestly is. I mean, that's sort of the dream, right? You look at a display and it doesn't matter what you did content on any other device. It's just all on, the screen right in front of you, and you can get it and it's accessible, and that's the dream. I think we're still a couple hops away from being there, but that's the goal. So
A couple might be generous, but yes.
yes, I was rounding down.
Several.
Just trying to be optimistic. Other things that have happened this month, or in the past couple weeks, actually, maybe a week. Patch Tuesday came out, a regularly scheduled process. 2.0 day vulnerabilities, the best kind out there. I don't know if anything stuck out in your head, Aaron, before we get to the reader question of the week.
Heard about some printer problems, which is a
Yeah, that's
bummer. And
printers
people
and
and we get
problems.
for laughter because there's no surprise there. But the other thing is that now I think it's in 2004, the 2004 build of Win 10, that you can't update drivers from Device Manager
Oh,
anymore, which isn't that earth-shattering for most people, but still sort of a funny
that's a
twist on
quirk.
all of this. So a couple of those things, but otherwise, a fairly ordinary thing, but speaks to the need for testing as always.
As always. All right, Aaron, you kind of posed a question last week, and one of our readers, or listeners, I should say, picked up on it. I kind of glossed over it initially, but they said, you talked about hiring remote people during this sort of pandemic, that sort of these absolute pandemic we're in, where, we can't meet people in person. You're basically limited to like a resume, maybe a phone call. Can you just walk us through your, I don't know if vetting process is the right way, but how you have approached this idea? Because there's either people out there looking for jobs and are going to be going through this, or people on the other side of the fence trying to hire people. And I'm just curious, your side of how you guys approach this.
Sure. And it's interesting because it's a good question, and it's timely. So we look at this time as being, and I don't know if other people think this same way, but we really see it as a strategic opportunity because we're seeing talent that other prior to now, and I may have mentioned this last month, but that really was not accessible. A lot of very talented people who got sprung loose from, their IT jobs at, some hospitality, organization or a major cruise line or whatever might be the case that really has been taken to its knees. And so our hope is to capitalize on this, right? And we're trying to be really careful about where we're spending and how we're spending, but also saying, wow, if there's a place to take a risk right now, it's on people because we have access to talent that we wouldn't have otherwise had prior to now, which leads exactly to that question of then how do you do it? And it's very strange because we now have gone through this process with a couple more people since the last month and now have probably five people, maybe even a couple more than that, who no person in our organization has ever met in real life. Very, very strange feeling. In fact, we were on a call the other day and we were asking one of these people how tall they were because we didn't know,
that's a
and
good
it turned
point.
into this really bizarre conversation. Our recruiting process has evolved a lot over the years, and we have basically just gone all in on the direction that we had established, and we've drawn it out a little bit is the other tactic. So I think to kind of preamble a really robust answer is to be ready for a longer process. Generally, people need to be ready for a more protracted process, possibly more discussions, all of them happening in these, very not so stimulating virtual environments such as we are participating in now. And then some other due diligence bells and whistles. But the long answer then is that the recruiting process really starts as normal, right? I mean, all of our searching is done online and variety of tools from LinkedIn and Glassdoor and Indeed and everywhere we can. Heck, Craigslist can be a really great place to post certain jobs, really,
Interesting.
amazingly.
Yeah, I never would have
Yeah,
guessed that.
you might be surprised. It's amazing. And so it's really about playing, sort of just the prospecting game. And then once we identify some candidates, then it's, this very, this is where it kind of will get drawn out, I think, for most organizations and for most candidates is, talk to the recruiter, talk to maybe your first discussion isn't with the hiring manager. Maybe it's with, some other, administrative person. Then maybe the hiring manager, then maybe a team member on the hiring man team, which would be a prospective teammate of sorts. Then in our case, and I think that we're not unique in this regard, we have a professional assessment, which is like a test you take to see, how well you think on your feet, how well you collaborate, some of those personality elements. And it's not like, everyone's familiar with Myers-Briggs and some of these things. It's not exactly like that, but it's in a little bit of that vein because we know, culturally what kinds of personalities work and, based on the role and the team, what kind of rigors there will be. And so we look at that for red flags. Based on that, then we have another, the outcome of that, maybe everything's all green. It's just kind of a final discussion and off we go with an offer or a thanks, but no thanks. But anything pointed out by that, that might be a concern or a disparity with, dovetailing really cleanly into the team or the culture, then is another set of discussions. And it's really back to the hiring manager and their team to determine if this person, can work in spite of some of these natural tendencies, which, is kind of interesting because sometimes the natural tendencies are really advantageous, but just don't fit with the team, right? It's just kind of counterculture, and that is kind of a barrier too. So I think those are the main things. And I one of the good things I've seen some people do, some of our hires that we've made in this time, is they've taken pains to put themselves out there. So taking this discussion a step further, let's say you get the offer and you accept and you start. I think my default setting historically has been to start quietly, right? Mind your P's and Q's.
Learn the
Show
culture.
up, do your work, go home, keep to yourself, observe. Well, that's kind of hard because what are you observing? The intranet, the Teams chat, the people who've done really well have put themselves out there and driven, the virtual happy hour or just a team social discussion. The virtual happy hour, it like somehow, I don't know, doesn't play out that great under our roof. It just sort of
It
like, this is weird.
always sounds good, but
Right. But to ingratiate yourself with the team by creating opportunities to talk about yourself and get to know the other team members and get to know the organization that way. You find out about the company's history, all these things that would happen, in the cafeteria or at the coffee machine or just, when those social minutes bubble up between meetings. Just in the bullpen in the office that don't happen. So I think that's every bit as important because once we do start going back to the office, and some places are, you want to make that a smooth landing because I think that could be a real hard adjustment for some people too. But that's where we are, and this is, maybe something that we should revisit too if things improve, which they seem to be on an
Crossing
okay
my
track.
fingers. I am crossing fingers. There's wood here. I'm knocking on it. Where any other spiritual things that can help make this happen?
So, yeah, I mean, if we're, if we get back to it, it'd be a really good follow-on discussion to say, hey, here's what's happened with a few of these folks, but It's been overall, I would say, promising from my perspective, the results that we've gotten because we've had the luxury of more candidates and being more selective and really being more deliberate about this because we are worried about it, right? And I think it's an opportunity for people to do the same. I mean, I think that's my key advice is be every bit as a person looking for a job, be every bit as cautious and due diligent about the entire process. Be even double down on your preparations for those discussions, right? Do even more research when, be careful about the offer you take, right? And it goes beyond the financial side of it, which is an important consideration, but just sort of the terms and expectations, just make sure everything's clear and create lots of opportunities to check in with your manager, make sure they're happy with th where things are and where they're going. You're communicating with them enough, but not driving them nuts. All those things. You can't communicate too much, really.
Yeah, one of the things, and I can't positively say I'm going to do this, but it's one of the things, it's all going to depend on how much time and how long this takes. One of the things I personally want to do is after, again, hopefully we're all back in the offices, I want to call people, like say Aaron, for example, and ask you like five questions, like what did your company learn? How did you deal with it? How did you migrate? What were the challenges? And ask those same five questions to 20 different companies and just kind of compile and talk about this experience and how it has evolved or changed their business fundamentally going forward. I think that would be some pretty neat insights given how we've all adapted.
I agree. I think that'd be an amazing discussion. And I think, we might have carve out a slice of time in this podcast for that, right? On the
Sure,
regular,
absolutely.
especially as we hit these major milestones,
Yes.
to kind of revisit that. Where we live, I don't see any of those things happening anytime soon, unfortunately. And part of that's a function of we're heading into fall and, all of that. But yeah, I think this is going to be an interesting thing to watch, and especially for IT, it's going to be a whole other crazy rodeo once everyone's back at work, right? In the office physically, and what are the implications of that? What's going to happen, on every front? It's yeah, I can't wait.
All those machines out in the wild coming back and plugging into the hard Ethernet.
Right, exactly. The network that no one's keeping much of an eye on right now.
It's going to be interesting. It is going to be interesting. Well, Aaron, we are just about out of time, but I wanted to thank you for one answering that question. I think a lot of people are going to have that on their mind here as we just kind of round the clock out on the calendar. To everybody else, thanks for tuning in. You'll find links down to Smart Deploy, down to Aaron, down in the podcast description, and we'll catch all of you right back here next time.